Blog Talk Radio.
I've got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow. Got that string around my finger. What a world, what a life, I'm in love. I've got a song that I sing, I can make the rain.
Welcome, America, to Breaking News Journal on Air Radio. I know that that song that you just listened to reminded us of a time that seemed to have passed us by. Today, we're going to have an author, a businessman, and this is very rare for Breaking News Journal because a lot of times we have people that are complaining about what's going on in our society and what can we do about it and what are we going to do about it. Today we have a CEO, author of the book, the books, plural, of The Devil at My Doorstep and the new book, The Devil at Our Doorstep. And let me tell you, people, you need to go out and get this book by Mr. Dave Beagle. And he has been all over the country speaking to the Heritage Foundation. He's been on Glenn Beck's show. I listened to some of his videos on S.E. Cup, and I listened to him on the Lou Dobbs program. And I tell you, he has such passion for our country and his business. And he is the CEO, guys, and get this, Executive Management Services Incorporated. So all you big businesses out there who need someone who is very good at business and keeping your offices looking, I mean, absolutely marvelous and beautiful, then you want to definitely hire David Beagle's company to do business for you. David, thank you so much for really being a guest on Breaking News Journal on Air Radio today.
Well, Ruth, I'm honored to be on, and thanks for the nice introduction. I appreciate it. And you're right, I've been busy lately, and it's wearing me out, not just the speeches, but I just was a grandfather for the third time on Sunday,
yes,
too.
Yes, congratulations.
So.
Oh, what was, girl or boy?
A boy. Our family's only had boys so far. It's interesting, but it's the last couple of days we've been helping them out, and of course, everybody's tired around here right now. You know how that goes.
I do know how it goes. As a matter of fact, you were speaking to me when you were on your way to Michigan, and you were going to do a speaking engagement. Did you get a chance to get through it without having to turn around and go back home to the hospital?
Yep, I did. It worked out fine, and it was a long day, but it's funny. I drove up there that morning, and, you know, I talked texting you or emailing you and
yeah.
Talking to my son, and he was texting me and everything. He says, Dad, go ahead. And I did, and I came back that night. I didn't get home till and get to bed till 3 o'clock Friday morning.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
And then we had the baby on Sunday. So, but it all worked out, and everything's fine. Mom's good shape, and new grandson's in good shape, so we're happy.
How many grandchildren do you have now?
That's my third, so.
Oh, okay. Oh, my goodness. Proud grandpa. Boy, there's going to be a lot going on in that family in the next few years.
Well, I know. And see, my one son, he and his wife haven't had any kids yet. And this was my youngest son. This was his first. So it could be interesting before it's over with.
It sure could. Well, you know, I have been paying attention, like I said, to all the different interviews that you've done. And, you know, you have such passion and compassion for our country. And I want you to talk about how you got started in your business, because we've been reading, me and Professor White, we've been reading about your book, and you have really encouraged us and with what you wrote about in, the devil at our doorstep. But I want you to talk a little bit about how you got started in your business, because when you get to talking about the SEIU and what happened, this is going to be really, it's really mind-blowing how you were able to actually bring them down. You know, I just want to say it that way because I like saying it that way.
Yeah, but they don't like you saying it that way.
So. I don't care.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was born in Indianapolis, and when I was about 10 years old, my dad was transferred to Fort Wayne. He worked for a finance company, mm-hmm. and, you know, my mom worked also, and so before we moved to Fort Wayne, I stayed with my grandparents all the time, and then we moved up to Fort Wayne. I was in school and that, but I went to school there and met my wife, and we got married at the age of 19 years old. And I went to college on a basketball scholarship, and I was going to be a teacher, believe it or not, and I was going to teach German. And I was at Wabash College, which is an all-men's college, and the first year, the coach that recruited me decided he didn't want to coach anymore. And they brought in another guy, and the other guy that replaced him just was, he just didn't understand basketball or people at all. And it was really sad because, you know, I was on a full scholarship to play basketball, but I still worked. And this is something people need to understand. Even though I did that, I played basketball. You know, I was pledging a fraternity, I was, you know, going to classes and that. But I still worked at a local garage pumping gas and working on cars in the evenings in my spare time so I could have spare money to spend. I think work ethic is a great thing for all people, and people need to learn that. But,
absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway, I left after my sophomore year because the coach was so bad, and I finished up at Tri-State University. And when I went up there, what's interesting is that they didn't have an education program. They didn't have German, so I couldn't get a teacher's degree, and I couldn't learn any more of the German language. But my professor, who was my counselor, says, you know, you're very good at the sciences, and you're personable. He says, why don't you be a doctor? And I thought, oh, what the heck? You know how you are when you're younger.
I do.
So I got a degree in biology. And I went to Ball State University and got a master's in microbiology, and I applied for medical school, and I ended up third on the waiting list at Indiana University. And the reason I did is because my first semester at Wabash, with so much going on, I was engaged to be married, I was playing basketball, pledging a fraternity, and of course, you know, your first year in college, you like to party a little bit too.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and
that's what you did, didn't you? Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so my grades my first semester weren't very good. And they said, well, we have people that their grades were good every semester, so we can't, you know, we just can't put you ahead of them, even though you did good on everything, your test and that. So I was on the waiting list. A company in Fort Wayne called Central Soya asked me or offered me a job. Some of the people there knew me. And I started out in research. And I was actually the manager of their experimental feed mill, where they were working on projects to make animal feed better, faster, with less waste and all that kind of stuff. And that was my first introduction to, number one, managing people, and number two, the union, because they had the grain millers union. And I even talk about it in my book how one of the guys there tested me on my first day.
I read that. That was funny.
Yeah, I mean, it was my fault. I forgot my hard hat. But you know something? I gained respect from that guy and the crew the very first day. And I spent 8.5 years with Central Soya. I went from that to running feed mills and soybean processing plants with them. And actually, I was their turnaround specialist for plants that were failing. And every one of them were unionized. And this is an important point that people need to understand. And the way I turned them around was not going in and changing out machinery or changing processes or anything like that. What I did is I went out and made a team. You know, I went out and I engaged the employees working in the plant. I got the supervisors and that to understand that they had to treat people right. We cleaned up break rooms and locker rooms, and we made the place a good place to work, and we made it a team effort.
Yes.
And within a year and a half, we would turn these things around.
Now, I mean, was that the same company that, and please tell this story because I don't want to give it away, the story about the guy who was asleep and you came up on him when he was asleep and what happened?
Yeah. He was an older guy. And he was out in the plant in the warehouse, and he was sitting on a bag of feed. He had fallen asleep, and he was a good guy, and I liked him. He could be a little cantankerous at times, but I just walked up to him when he was sleeping. I just nudged him with his toe with my toe. He woke up. He saw me, and he just goes, oh, please don't fire me. And I said, do you know better than that? I'm not going to fire you. But you know something? You're one of the older guys around here. I need you to be a leader. I need you to show the other people what needs to be done. And from that day on, he was on my side. He understood that it wasn't me against them. It was us. And he helped me get the place turned around. And
wow.
That was actually in Abilene, Kansas, by the way.
Wow.
And,
you just don't hear stories like this anymore. I mean, this is why I wanted to have you on Breaking News Journal on air. Stories like this, the real deal, you just don't you don't hear about anymore in America. If you did, if that same thing happened to a person today on the job, they would be fired in no time, because all people think about, and for the most part, is the bottom line.
Well, they do, or you know, they got they get their ego in the way, or things
like
that. And
we don't have to get into that one.
Yeah, the way I look at it is, you know, we want to give people a chance to succeed. But they're going to have to do their part, too. And,
absolutely.
You know, we'll give them every opportunity. But, you know, if we've given them plenty of opportunity and they don't want to do it, then they're going to have to go someplace else. And but, you know, we want people to succeed. And, you know, we've got people in this company that started out as cleaners. In fact, we got one guy that I talk about in the book. He's a Hispanic guy.
Mm.
He started here in Indianapolis, cleaning a church on the south side of Indianapolis. He was promoted to supervisor. Then he was promoted to a large school that we do. He was the project manager there. And then we moved him to Florida as our branch manager down there.
Absolutely.
And here... And I can't say the guy's name, and then I wouldn't do that. But recently, about a year and a half ago, he lost his wife. And he has struggled, and he's had some drinking problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually been in jail the last 30 days.
Oh, wow.
And he just got out, and that area reports to my sister because we're a family business.
Wow, yes, yes.
And she was down there last night and talking to him, saying, you know, we have some customers down there that now, because of his drinking problems, won't let him
right.
in the buildings.
Right.
But,
oh, he must be acting up.
Yeah, he was having some problems. But my sister was down there last night and said, look, we're going to keep you on. We have a major customer here that's agreed to let you be the project manager at the building, so you'll still have a job with us. And, you know,
how
we're going to work
wonderful.
With you.
How
but
wonderful.
So we try to do those type of things. And but you asked me, how did I get into this business? I was with Central Soya, and, you know, being transferred around the country, and we ended up back in Indianapolis where we are today. And I was challenged to turn a plant around here, and I had got it as best as it was going to be, quite honestly.
Right.
The plant was old and needed to be closed. But they wanted me in to go to Kansas City. They had just built a new pet food facility, and they wanted me to, you know, get it going because it was struggling. And I was in Fort Wayne, Indiana at the corporate offices, and they were going through this with me, and I said, look, guys, you know, I've been traveling around the country for 7.5 years now, you know, turnaround plants. We're back in Indianapolis. I'm a Hoosier at heart. You know, this is where we're from. This is where we want to be. And I would just rather stay in Indianapolis or come up to Fort Wayne in the corporate office and do something here.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at me. There's two or three of them in the room. And people don't know this, but at that point, Disney owned Central Soya. They had bought them
to
raid their pension funds. And I said, you know, I just want to stay here. And they looked at me and they said, David, you're a young man, and I was 31 at the time, and you're going to be doing this for the next 10 years. And, Ruth, I couldn't do that. I wanted to stay in Indiana. I didn't want to move my family anymore because my daughter just started first grade, and my boys were in kindergarten. And I just stood up, and I said, no, I resign. And, you know, I'm driving home, and I'm going, what did you just do? You got a wife, three kids, a mortgage, a dog, and you don't have a job. And but the
next
day,
that's rare.
That I know. The next day, Cargill called me, and because they knew about me, And I did the same thing for them consulting-wise for about 6 months. And they offered me jobs out of the state, and I turned them all down. They offered me 3 different jobs. I turned them down. And finally, I applied for a cleaning position to run a general as general manager to run a company here in Indiana. And here's where it gets interesting and how it all gets into this SEIU thing. The guy I interviewed with was a very smart, elderly Jewish man, and but I didn't like his – I could tell his management style was not one of taking care of people. It was one of very, very tough top-down management. And so he offered me the job, and I turned it down. And my wife was getting a little worried. She says, you know, you need a real job. And I said, well, I'm doing okay with, you know, consulting. And she finally says, Dave, you really need to think about it. Well, this guy came back and offered me the job again, offered me a little bit more money. So I took it.
Okay.
3.5 years later, I was in his office, and he had turned out to be just what I thought he was. He was a great businessman. He taught me a lot about business. But he was a terrible manager, and he treated people poorly.
Wow.
And I was in his office. I was actually in the office next to his, sitting at a desk. And on the corner of that desk was a letter that he had written to his vice president about me and how bad I was of a manager and a businessman. And it was like a 2-page letter. I packed my briefcase up. I picked up the letter. I walked in his office. I laid it down on his desk. And he was on the phone, and he says, I got to go. He gets off the phone. He says, you weren't supposed to see that. And I said, no kidding. He says, we need to talk. I said, no, I'm done.
Wow.
And I walked out 3.5 years later in the same position I'd been 3.5 years previous, you know. And that's when I decided I was going to start EMS, and we were going to do it my way. We were going to be a successful business. We were going to take care of our customers. We were going to take care of our employees. And we were going to do the right things, and we were going to be known for our integrity and professionalism. And that's what we did. And you know, starting in 1989, and we grew the business, and in the mid-90s, you know, I made sure our people had, you know, benefits like vacation and holiday pay. We introduced health care, opportunity health care reform and all that. And we continued to grow until in 2006. We were in 33 states and had about 4,000 employees. And the SEIU comes along and attacks us indiscriminately.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, let's get right into that, because I was going to ask you something just before we get into that. You know, they say that, you know, I think when you and I were on Barbara's Hair on Fire out of Arizona, I was talking to you about the fact that the teachers union, I asked my husband not to teach for the public school system again, because their unions were using employees' monies to do political things and for causes that he did not believe in and we didn't believe in. And the unions, not only that, but my husband was telling me, he said they made us join the unions and said if we wanted to teach at all, we had to join the union. And I know this is going to fit right into what you're talking about, because they took over $600 a month out of my husband's check. So they were making very good money from educators.
Well, they do, and that's the thing. And I, you know, when I say the SEIU attacked us indiscriminately, they came after all the major cleaning companies in the Midwest, and they wanted us to sign these neutrality agreements, which would take our people's right to a secret ballot election away, as far as, you know, union representation goes, and revert to card check, because in these neutrality agreements, like I say, it takes away the election, but it also has a clause where you got to give a list of all your employees and their home addresses. That's so the union can go to their homes and intimidate them and sign the union cards. Oh, and they do it. And I went through. And when I read all that, I just told him, look, this is morally wrong. If you want to have an election, I'll live with it. I even took an ad out in the Indianapolis Star to the SEIU. I said, SEIU, please fish or cut bait. Let's have an election. and you know, all these lies that you're putting out there about us and misinformation and how you're twisting things around is wrong. You know, put your money where your mouth is. Well, they never would. And you know, we just kept. We decided to go on the offensive, and we kept track of everything they did, and we filed charges with the National Labor Relations Board. Our employees didn't want them. They were tired of being intimidated, and we finally beat them.
And you know what? You said something about the clergy too. This disturbs me because people think automatically that the clergy would be, to me, on the side of God and His people and doing people right and stuff like that. But they almost tried to strong arm you. And I would like for you to share that part as well.
Well, yeah, that was interesting. You know, and you were talking about the politicians a minute ago, political. Let me just say something real quick. They had Senator Evan Bayh from Indiana call one of our largest customers here in Indianapolis and ask him to cancel our contract unless I sign the agreement.
No way!
That's how they use the political money. They get these people elected, and then they go to them and strong-arm favors to go after businessmen like me or other people. They do it to the media. That's one reason the media will not print much about the unions, because the unions will go after their advertisers.
So that's the reason why that they are cowing down to whatever is going on, propaganda that's out there. You know what I'm saying? This is absolutely insane. And, you know, to add on to that, you know, that just recently Robert Redford, he came out with his propaganda bill about, you know, the call the company you keep about the Weather Underground. And yet, you know, the guy who knows, the FBI informant Larry Grafwall, who knows about the what happened with the Weather Underground, you know, they try to shut him up completely. So the same kind of thing, the same kind of strong-arming that happens in with you happens in the media, is happening in the education business. This has got to stop, and I'm glad that you're the only person that I know of that stood up against any union and then beside that won. So I would like for you to continue on with that before I go on my own tangent. And then we got a caller in for you.
Okay, well, the clergy, real quick. The clergy, they're actually a group that's put together wherever the union's organizing by a group called the Interfaith Workers Justice Group out of Chicago. And if you go on their website, they're supported by the unions. That's where they get all their money. And what they do is, like when the SEIU was attacking us here in Indy, they went and they got several of the local clergy who were, you know, beholden to them, and they attacked us. They did sit-ins at the buildings and closed them down so people couldn't get in or out. They were arrested and hauled away. They wrote letters to our customers telling how we abused and mistreated people. They wanted a meeting with me, and this is just, I'll tell you this real quick. Before I took my daughter with me, Kelly, she was our HR director at the time, and before we could even sit down, there were six of them in a room. One of the Methodist ministers looked at me, and he says, "We want you to be neutral." And I said, "Father, I am neutral. I've told the union, let's have an election." He says, "No, by neutral, I want you to sign the neutrality agreement." And I said, "Father, with all due respect, have you ever seen or read a neutrality agreement?" He says, "No." I said, "Why would you want me to sign it?" He says, "Because we want you to be union." And the next guy was a Catholic priest, and I'm Catholic. I said, "Father, we do all the right things. We, you know, we pay above average industry standard wages, and we have benefits, and we have state-of-the-art chemicals and equipment, and, you know, we do all these things." And he looked at me and says, "David, we don't care about the facts. We just want you to be union."
See, this is what the people need to know, and this is why you have gone so far in our society, David, because most companies are not going to take that risk, again, about the bottom line. You cared more about your dignity. You cared more about our country than to let them get away with this kind of thing. And this is very, very important for America to know, for the listeners of Breaking News Journal on Air to listen to and to really take heed to what is being said here, because this is vitally important for the stability of our country. And, David, what you have done has something that it just blows everybody's mind. And I think that more people need to stand up to this kind of action. But a lot of times people don't have the power or the means to be able to do it.
Well, most people don't want to face that, and they're willing just to go along with it. And you know, we have to stop it because this country is going in the wrong direction, and if we don't stop it soon, we're in trouble. And
in every way you can absolutely think of, we're going in the wrong way.
That's right. And what really bothers me is people don't understand that this administration, they are attached to the SEIU by the arms. I mean, I think I told you this when I was talking to you last.
Yes.
We actually have a video of the SEIU in Chicago 2008 where the president was meeting with them. And he says, I've been a part of you my whole adult life. I've organized with you. I've worked with you. And together we're going to paint this country purple. Purple is the SEIU's colors. And the SEIU are avowed socialist communist.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. David, I'm going to open up the line. I do have a caller in for you. You want to take it?
Sure.
Okay. Hello?
Hello?
I know that voice.
Oh, this is Professor White. Dave, so encouraging to hear you and so thrilled to be reading your book.
Well, thank you, Professor. I appreciate that. I hope you guys will pass it around because the mainstream media won't. They just they are either, you know, philosophically agree or they're afraid of the unions because of what they'll go after their advertisers. That's why Glenn Beck's not with Fox anymore, because they went after Fox's advertisers.
Yes. Yes.
No kidding. No kidding.
Yep.
Oh, I wondered. Well, I've got personal experience. I was a public school teacher in Southern California. And as Ruth shared, when I signed up, they had a requirement that I join two of the teachers' union, national. The NEA was one of them. I forget what the other one was. And every month they took $600 out of my paycheck to support their leftist activities. Kind of reminds me of the AARP, the seniors organization that is so to the left. They just wore me down. It was so hard to go to work every day, seeing the corruption and the harassment that was going on. It just wore me down. I'm still in education now. I left that position, and thanks to Ruthie's strong support, much like your wife did when you were going through the starting stages. Thank God for strong women, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. And you just made me think of something. You're talking about your story, and Ruth, maybe you can get some of your listeners to do this. But there's a professor here in the Midwest. I can't tell you which university, but he sent me an email last week and a story of a guy that started in a plant and was unionized against his will and had to pay dues and all that. And then he sent me one on another guy here just this week that. Misinformed by the union he was with, and he supported them through negotiations, and the company kept telling him, look, we can't do this. If you guys keep pushing us, you know, we're gonna go out of business and close the plant. And the union didn't listen, and the company closed the plant. And the guy was upset with the union bosses not being honest with him. And bottom line, what this professor wants to do, he says, Dave, you have the people's ears on this. He says, would you consider writing another book and just based on stories, true stories of people around the country, solicit their stories and let them send them to you, and you put it together under your name so they don't have to have their names out there and be, you know, intimidated or unions going after them? And I told him, yeah, I'll be happy to look at that. So
Wow. If
you know people out there that would like to send me their stories, we're going to start a compilation of stories from people across the country who are tired of being intimidated and misinformed and all that by the union bosses.
Wow, that would be great. You know, does that sound something like you want to do, Professor?
That sounds fantastic. You know, Dave, as I was listening to you, to you in your story. I wrote down some words. I wrote down the commitment and compassion and courage and above all, common sense. My gosh, you're a real voice. Maybe you can give me some practical advice. I'm kind of up in years, but because of my stand against the union, I don't have a cushy retirement or anything like that, but I still love to educate. I'm working around the corner, a little part-time job with the Sylvan Learning Center here, and I'm also developing a math curriculum for scared people who are scared of math. And it seems to me that an awful lot of companies have employees who are scared of math. And math is so important in every stage of work, and especially customer service. I'm thinking of how I could approach companies around here to encourage and inform and inspire and educate their workers to help them be better workers, to do a better job and improve their companies, and kind of be a win-win situation. Any practical things you could offer me as far as how I might approach this daunting task?
That is a daunting task, and I'll tell you why. I've spoke at several colleges and also at several high schools, and one of the things that I've brought up to the educators and the presidents of these schools is that one thing I think this country really lacks is, and it's a takeoff on what you're saying. You say math, but I put it in a little bit broader perspective in teaching what business is all about. So that you know, because a lot of these kids don't even know how to balance a checkbook when they come out of school. And I told them, I said, we should really have in all of our secondary education, you know, we should have mandatory classes just like you have biology or English or anything like that, where they have to take business courses so they understand what the free markets are about, how they work. And so when they go out in the world, they understand what they need to do to help make themselves successful by making their company successful. And I'm having, quite honestly, Professor, some of the same problems you are of getting people to buy into that. You know, that our education programs are so stuck in a rut. Does that make sense?
Yep. It sure
well,
does.
I know what I've seen when I was working in the corporate world is that I used to see companies offer classes to basic education classes to their employees so that they could be more empowered. So maybe that's a way to do it, and I think that could be, and you guys can think about this, but that could be a way where employers or kids that need teachings, so some of maybe these companies can open up their own offices so that kids can be tutored or parents can be tutored so that they can be empowered because they're not getting the education they need to get in the public school system. And my alternative is to get these kids out of the public school system altogether and get the educators as well so that they can have they're not empowered or in fear of the politicians or the unions. That's my take on the whole thing.
Well, I agree with you. And, Professor, if you wouldn't mind, have Ruth send me along kind of what you're looking at and doing and that, and let me look at it, and I'll see if I can help out a little bit. I'm frustrated, too, because, and I agree with you, Ruth, the problem is especially with a company like ours where we're spread all over the country, is getting people in. I mean, we even got people working out in desert areas, you know.
Wow.
Getting them in to do things like that. And so it's tougher. It doesn't mean we can't figure out how to do it, but we have to get this country back on the track that they understand what's going on and they understand what our system of government and our free markets are all about. And, you know, Professor, math is part of it. I mean, if you don't understand how dollars and cents work, you're in trouble.
Well, I'm a case in point. I was one of those mathophobes, I call it. I was terrible. I was terrible in math. And, you know, bless my heart, my dad was a genius. And, you know, he could see the solutions to problems. He didn't have to work through them logically. I did. And so I could ask him the question, the answer, and he could give me that answer, but he couldn't tell me how to get it, because I had to work through it, and he didn't. He was a genius. He just saw the answer. So it was extremely frustrating. So, you know, there's a lot of...
You know what? I can definitely tell you now that he's one of the best educators around. Everywhere he goes, that's, I mean, parents want to follow him, the students want to follow him. And one of the funniest things, I'm going to tell you this, because this is your show, I want you to talk about your book and stuff, but I do want to say this. A professor was going to Sylvan to teach a student one day, and the girl had been sitting in the classroom for a while. She wouldn't let anybody else teach her because she was waiting for Professor White to come in. She didn't even know he was going to be in that day. And she's like, I'm waiting for him. I don't want to be taught by anybody else. And then she just sit there. And this has been the story of his education and the way he treats people and teaches people ever since I've been married to him, and that's almost 34 years now. So anyway, that's... I wanted to say, as we end the program, I really wanted to say Dave, this has been a wonderful time having you on Breaking News Journal on Air Radio, and I want you to give your website, your business website, because your office is absolutely gorgeous. Go ahead and tell people your business office if they wanted to hire your business and stuff, as well as the Devil at our Doorstep website as well.
Well, our business is it's www.emsinc.com. That'll take you to the EMS group of companies and the different things we do, because we have the commercial cleaning company, we got a supply company, and we've got a security guard company, and
wow.
We have a small manufacturing company now, and so we do a lot of things. And then for the book, they can go to thedevilatourdoorstep.com, and you can get the book there, or you can read my blogs. I get on rants once in a while, and those rants have helped. So
that's good. But you know, everybody needs to have this book, and they need to read it. And I tell you, this is a part of our reading session now. We have Professor White and I have our own book club now. We just every night was like, okay, we got to read the book now. You know, so it has been an honor having you on Breaking News Journal on Air Radio. Is there anything else before we sign off that you would like to tell everybody?
Well, no, I just want to thank you and encourage you to keep up the good work and doing the things you're doing, because we have to expose what's going on with the mainstream media and with this this administration and that. So that we can turn America back around and get it on the right track.
Absolutely.
You know,
and you know what? They're not going to be mainstream media anymore. Breaking News Journal is going to be mainstream media, because we're doing feature films, we're doing TV channel launchings and all this kind of stuff. So that's where we're headed, because we have to get people to know about what's going on in the real news, not this fabricated stuff, and not beholding to unions, because we don't have to be bothered with the broadcast unions and all the different things that they're doing. So, you know, you and I, we're going to be doing a lot of talking together, Dave, and I look forward to us, you know, working together and getting the information out about your books and all your businesses, and I expect that they will grow, just abundantly. And I thank you so much for being on Breaking News Journal on Air Radio today.
Well, thank you, and we're going to make sure we get your information out, too, to all of our people that subscribe to our websites and that, see if we can help you out, okay?
Thank you, and you know, and as soon as this program is over with about 10 or 15 minutes, I will send you the embedded code so you can put it on your sites.
Okay, that sounds good. Well, listen, you two have a great evening and enjoy yourself and relax just
God
a little bit,
you.
Okay?
All right, God bless
God
you.
Bless
have
you.
A great day.
Thank you, David.
All right, bye-bye. Come rain. Come shine, I meet you, and to me the world is fine. Then I kiss your lips, and the pounding becomes the ocean's roar. When you arouse the need in me, my heart says yes indeed in me.
proceed to tell you that you're marvelous, tell you that you're wonderful again, 'cause I've got you under my skin, and I love you under my skin.